you say, who's Pete Seeger? Everybody has probably sung in their lifetime a Pete Seeger tune, whether you were in school with the sing-alongs or something that he either wrote, co-wrote, or made popular. You've probably sung them all your life. The king of folk music, now a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as one of the founding fathers, a Grammy Award winner. The guy is truly a legend in music, period.
He's an American musical icon, Stan.
That's right. Hi, Pete.
Well, hello. I didn't know I was a legend.
Come on. You're a very modest man. You are a legend. You're now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as one of the founding fathers, Grammy Award winner, and just pages and pages of fantastic music that, let's face facts, we've been singing them since we were kids.
Well, it's true. I always liked people to join in on the singing, and I usually sang in the schools and the summer camps, and the kids went up and grew up and went to college, so I found myself singing at colleges way back in the frightened 50s when the blacklist was around.
Yeah,
and not only all those accolades, Pete, but I've been told by my five-year-old daughter that you are better than Barney.
Been playing some of your music to our daughters, and Mark's daughter just, you're better than Barney. She's discovering you like so many generations have.
Well, what can I tell you don't know already?
Oh, boy, you probably got stories that we could go for the next day and a half on. You made the comment one time, or you probably, participation is the name of the game as far as your music goes and getting involved and enjoying it in that aspect.
Well, it's kind of a religion with me. I look around the world and I see fantastic things being done, but all too often, people are told, now, you let the expert do it. You just pay your money and do your job and sit back and relax and watch the experts do it, whether it's sports or music or... Well, can you think of how foolish it is in millions of homes, the husband and wife sitting there on the couch watching the professional lover pretend to kiss another professional lover?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends on what your wife looks like. Sometimes that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, if your wife's, you know, big, fat, roly-poly, ugly, and you know, want to get away from her, you know. Let me ask you something. Are things getting better in this country, in this world? You know, for so long you speak about labor, the civil rights movement. Are things getting better? Are they better than they were, say, in the 1950s?
I've got the usual answer. Both is happening. Things are getting worse in some ways, getting better in another. Tell you what, there's a story. It's a true story, and it's whenever people ask me questions like that, I usually have to tell this story. It happened in 1960. It starts off, there was a policeman in Union City, New Jersey. That's right across the river from New York. And one day he said to his wife, "Honey, let's go visit Niagara Falls." He was an African-American named John Hayes. Well, she said, "That's a nice idea," and they picked a weekend and drove up. Well, that same weekend, there was a man who lived in the city of Niagara who had a little putt-putt motorboat, and he invited two young people out for a spin, a 7-year-old boy and his older sister, a 17-year-old girl. The father said, "You got life jackets, don't you?" "Oh, yes, I got plenty." And they went out, but something went wrong with the motor. It was a borrowed motor, and he leaned down. He was trying to fix it and trying to fix it. He straightened up to find out that they were going to go over the Niagara Falls. He said to the girl, "Jump out. You're a strong swimmer. You just might make it to shore before you go over." He strapped two life jackets on the 7-year-old boy. People from tourists from the shore watched with horror as the boat went over the falls. Actually, it tipped over, they say, just before it went over, and two people in the water, and the boat went over. However, John Hayes, the black policeman, was sitting with his wife not too far, and he said, "There's somebody swimming out there." And he ran out. She was only about 20 feet from the edge of the falls, but he leaned out, holding onto the railing with one hand, and he grabbed three fingers of the other. He couldn't haul her to to the safety, though. He hollered and hollered, and finally another man came, and he grabbed the girl's other hand, and the two of them dragged her to safety. But about 1 minute later, somebody shouted, "Hey, the mate of the Mist is picking up somebody out of the water." With his two life jackets, he bobbed to the surface. On the deck of the boat, he said, "Hey, that's noisy. You could get killed doing that." He didn't know he was the only person in history to go over Niagara Falls with nothing but two life jackets and live. Well, you can bet that the girl, when she was swimming for shore, was saying, "Oh, God, please save me." But she didn't stop swimming. She was swimming as hard as she could. And that's an important lesson. I do believe that we got a chance that there'll be a world here in a couple hundred years, but I think it's a slim chance if you really want to know the truth.
So you still truly believe that, but you got to keep swimming.
That's right. You can go on the assumption that there is a possibility, and if the whole human race realizes this possibility, we're going to make it. But right now, a lot of people say, "Gee, what can I do? I'm just one person." But I think this world is going to be saved not by miracles of any one big savior. It's not going to be saved by one big organization, not a national organization or an international organization or a big corporation. It's going to be saved by tens of millions of little organizations. Save this, stop that. It'll be funny because people will disagree so much.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll agree on a few basic things, like... better to talk than shoot, right? And when words fail, well, try sports, try music, try pictures. Scientists, try numbers. And I used to say, when all else fails, try strawberry shortcake.
And as bared out by you for so many generations, get to the young people early and, let them have fun and sing along, but also make them think, too, right?
Try to.
Tell me about Woody Guthrie and how you guys met and what that guy was like.
Well, he comes from a long line of people from Wales who have a great tradition of singing and songwriting and storytelling. His father used to make up stories and sing wild cowboy blues. His mother knew some ancient ballads like the Gypsy Davy about the wife of the lord in the castle who was bored sitting around while her husband was away fighting wars here and there, and she runs off with a gypsy. Well, Woody was raised in one of these families where people told stories and sang songs, and somewhere in his life he decided he really liked to do it. He was hardly out of his teens, and a dust storm come along, and he had a friend who was a preacher, and he made up some semi-humorous verses for his friend, but they were serious, too. The churches were jammed down, the churches were packed. The dusty old dust storm, it blowed so black. The preacher could not read a word of his text. He folded his specs, took up collections, said, "So long, it's been good to know you. So long," so on.
Yeah, wow. When he wrote "This Land Is Your Land," I mean, were you there with him? I mean,
thing is, I never heard him sing it at the time he wrote it. I met him in March 1940. He arrived in late February. In fact, in my book, I put his handwritten copy of the song as he first wrote it, February 23rd, 1940. He just arrived hitchhiked from California to New York, cold, and while standing by the road, cars going zzz, zzz, with his thumb stuck out, he was making up these verses. The last line of his song was different than the way we know it. It was "God Bless America for Me," because Kate Smith singing "God Bless America" was on all the jukeboxes that year, and whenever he went into a diner for a cup of coffee, he'd hear it. And this was kind of his carrying the conversation forward. But he never sang the song. I'd never heard it till 1949. He had changed the last line to what we know now and recorded it for a tiny, tiny little record company called Folkways.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sell in the stores hardly at all, but it did sell to teachers in schools. And the song got in the school songbooks, and the kids took it from school to summer camp to church, from one guitar picker to another. That song has never been on the top 40, but it just got around.
You sang it in school. When did you first record it?
Oh, sometime in the 50s or 60s, I guess.
Now that's,
if I remember.
Now, that song, when he wrote it, he had kind of a different thing in mind than how it was taken when it was taken to the school kids.
Well, the school kids only got three verses. And when Arlo Guthrie, Woody's son, was growing up, Woody got out of the hospital. You know, he went into the hospital with an incurable genetic disease. His mother died of it. His grandfather died of it.
But they didn't know at the time, did they?
No, they didn't know what it was. Called Huntington's disease.
Yes.
It's a nervous degeneration of the nervous system. The brain cells, one by one, go. Parts of his brain were all there, but other parts had just turned to mush.
People associated it with alcoholism, didn't they?
Well, they think alcohol brings on a spell of it, but they're not sure about that even.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, Woody says, Arlo, they only printed three of my verses in their songbook. Here's a couple more you got to learn. In the squares of the city, by the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. As they stood there hungry, I stood there whistling. What did he whistle? This land, the whole crowd sings, this land was made for you and me. Was a great high wall there, tried to stop me. Was a great big sign, said private property. It's funny, rhyming stop me with property. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me.
Wow. That's you'd never hear that verse.
No.
You never hear it. Wow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.